Well, they've been scandalised, sanctified, they've been shot, they've been reimagined. They've inspired museums in Wexford and Cape Cod. They've dominated documentaries, novels, TV dramas, movies. And now, once again, the Kennedys are back. Glossy, beautiful, tragic. And they're on our screens. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. And this past week saw the release of Love Story, Ryan Murphy's take on the romance between John F. Kennedy Jr., son of the murdered president, and Caroline Bessette Kennedy, media darlings whose deaths in a 1999 plane crash shocked the world.
John, this is Caroline Bessette. She's our VIP whisperer at the company. Caroline, this is John Kennedy.
VIP whisperer, that's quite the moniker. What does that entail exactly?
No, it's a real high wire act. There's a cape involved.
But why, more than 60 years after that fateful day in Dallas, Texas, are we still so fascinated by the Kennedy dynasty? Is it glamour? Is it grief? Or perhaps political nostalgia? Is it a combination of all of those things? Well, joining me today is Ryan Tuberty, host of the Bookshelf podcast and author of JFK in Ireland, 4 Days That Changed a President. And you are very welcome to News Talk Daily, Ryan.
Ciara, a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for having me.
Let's start then with this latest, and it is a latest in a long stream of documentaries and miniseries and dramatizations. This time it is Love Story with JFK Jr. and Caroline Bessette Kennedy. It's on Disney Plus. It's streaming at the moment. You've been watching it for us. Your review?
Well, I suffered through it for you to see what exactly this is about. And I'd heard a few people talking about it over the weekend in that strange Wuthering Heights new movies vibe where you're saying, it's awful. I loved it. And with this, I thought, well, I'll have a look at it and see. Funny enough, with me, the Kennedy story is about weirdly policy and speeches and as much as the aesthetic. So I came at this going, what could they possibly do? I didn't realise it was Ryan Murphy until I saw JFK Jr. naked in the shower. And I thought, there's Murphy up to his old tricks again. Because when you know Ryan Murphy, you know, that's his jam. As much as everything else, very glossy, very glamorous, very different. But I looked at it and I knew the story about John F. Kennedy Jr. and Carolyn quite well because I lived through it and I was watching them as their story unfolded. And if I'm being honest with you, this was not for me. It is glossy, it is glamorous, of course, and it's quite boring.
Now, the word suffered, I think, gave it away at the very beginning there. You didn't enjoy it at all. Is it true, do you think, to their life story?
You see, I would say, how do we know? We weren't there. I mean, I think it's as true as possible. But when you're looking at Ryan Murphy, who brought the world Glee, an American Horror Story, among other things, and I'm not going to go at him necessarily, but he brings a very stylized sense of program making to the table. And when you're dealing with those shows, you think, fair enough, they're a bit of fun. But then when you've got real life, it's a little bit different.
Do you want to grab a drink?
Oh, technically I'm working.
Well, isn't everyone here?
Wow, quite the shrewd observation coming from the bell of the ball.
The bell of the ball? I know like 5 people here.
Well, you wouldn't know that from the way everyone's staring at you.
Oh, I think they're all staring at you.
You just keep that in your back pocket, don't you? I'm sure there's lots of people waiting to talk to you.
Oh, exactly. So you can't abandon me. So whenever my mom is at a party or out to dinner, she always locks eyes intensely with whoever she's talking to. Because she says that even the appearance of a recess in conversation will invite interlopers.
Well, then you better keep appearing to look interested.
So it's hard to know where the glossy magazine cover ends and the real story of these two people begins. Because the whole Kennedy myth, as you described brilliantly in your introduction, as being glamorous and griefy and nostalgic, the kind of humanity of these people has been lost in many ways. So it's hard to know, Ciara. Are we looking at a really good interpretation of a dramatic love story, or is it just Sex and the City wrapped up in a Kennedy myth?
And as you say, this is the territory of Ryan Murphy. You mentioned 2 of the programmes. I think loads in our audience will be familiar with Glee, American Crime Story, but he's also done O.J. Simpson, Gianni Versace, Joan Crawford. So he can do them brilliantly, but as you say, it can get a little bit queasy when there is this complex, tragic story and it's a glamorous, complex, tragic story suddenly.
Exactly. And I'm glad you mentioned the OJ, because I thought that was really excellent.
Yeah, actually. It's a brilliant watch.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm not having a go at him necessarily. But I think, you know, Joan Crawford would be very much his style as well. You know, he just sees a good camp story and turns it up. He spinal taps it up all the way. And that's what you can expect. So if people are going, wonder would I watch that? I think if you're a political junkie or a history person, I don't think you'd have any interest in this whatsoever. I think if you've had a long day at the office and you want a nice glossy magazine of a viewing, then you're going to be well looked after with this.
Every story needs an angle. A happy couple doesn't sell papers.
There isn't enough exposure in the world to prepare a woman to be your wife.
It's not a question of if I want to spend the rest of my life with you. It's a question of if I'm cut out to be Mrs. JFK Jr.
Now, I do remember the couple dying. It was July 16th, 1999. They were on their own private plane, wasn't it? A small plane that they were piloting. Yeah, and it crashed off Martha's Vineyard. And I remember it so clearly. I would have been 17 years of age because I was obsessed with her after her wedding picture, right? There's this fabulous wedding picture where she's wearing this really, really fitted V-neck stringy wedding dress. She's just the epitome, I think, of 1990s New York chic and glamour. And I absolutely was obsessed with her ever since then. And I just remember thinking, oh no, another tragedy within the Kennedy family.
Most people who have any passing interest in the Kennedy story will remember the scene of John F. Kennedy's funeral cortege coming through the streets of Washington and Jackie Kennedy standing there very elegantly as she always was, and holding the hands of her daughter Caroline and young John, as he was called, as he tried to salute his father's coffin at the age of maybe 3 years old. And it was very touching, and it moved the world, not to mention the nation. And so kind of the icon continued, and the iconography continued really with that. So he grew up to be, if you were to believe the Ryan Murphy show, he grew up to be a thick beefcake. And yet I used to buy and really enjoy a magazine he was heavily involved with called George Magazine, based in George Washington, which was a political magazine, much like the New York Magazine, as opposed to the New Yorker, which is just beyond most people's ken. So I wouldn't have thought he was that thick, to be honest with you. However, there was an awful thread of self-belief, some might say arrogance, in the family that said, "I'll drive you home," Teddy Kennedy might say, with horrible consequences, or "I'll fly you over to the island," as John F. Kennedy did, with tragic consequences. Anyone else would have said, I'll call you an Uber, if they had them at the time, or we'll just get the train. But they had this self-belief that really teetered on arrogance, that meant that they set themselves up for these almighty fatal falls. And such was the case at the end of this poor young couple's life. It was very tragic, very terribly sad, really.
When did you first become fascinated by the Kennedys, and what drew you in, Ryan?
There was a show called The Rock and Roll Years on BBC. It was just before The Reeling in the Years came out here. It was a kind of similar vibe where it was just video footage and text written underneath. And they went through the 1960s, into, you know, particularly obviously 1960, 61, 62. And I saw the Kennedy pictures for the first time, and I thought, I was bowled over by just how smart, how young, and how impressive he was, because the speeches and even the cadence of his oratory was quite something, and his classical references and his intellect was mind-boggling for kind of like a 14-year-old nerd in Ireland going, who is this guy? And why does he have a name that's kind of over the doors of a lot of shops and pubs in Ireland? That's strange, the Irish connection. So I kind of dug into it a bit more, and then I started getting into the Beatles and into Frank Sinatra and all that. And it was just kind of that era was to me beguiling and enchanting. And then when you get into the politics of it, it was fascinating. And so began a lifelong interest.
You talk about that 1963 visit that I think so many Irish people actually remember, or they feel like they remember because they've heard about it so often. People like me, people of my era, you talk in your book about the visit, his hair, those teeth, that tan skin, those eyes.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's what happened in researching that book all those years ago, more than 10 years ago now. But what I was struck by talking to people who saw Kennedy when he landed was the physicality of it, which I suppose chimes with the program we're talking about, because they were so interesting to look at and compelling to watch. So Kennedy comes to Ireland. He kind of was in the Oval Office reading his newspaper, and one of his kind of Irish-American cronies or hangers-on, what Jackie O would refer to as the Murphia, would said to him, Mr. Kennedy, Mr. President, you know, what's next? And he said, well, I want to go to Ireland. And he said, Mr. President, you don't need to go to Ireland. You've got the Irish vote stitched up. And he put the paper down a little bit, put the glasses to the tip of his nose, and he said, I'm the President of the United States of America. If I want to go to Ireland, I'm going to Ireland. Make it happen. Flip the paper back up again. And so the trip was born. And over he came. And the best way I could describe it for people who've never seen it, and I would urge you to look at the footage, great footage online, is when the plane landed on a typical June evening in Ireland, with the rain falling and the sky is grey, and a waxen President of Ireland, cold, you know, a Civil War hero, depending on what side you're on, Eamon de Valera comes along to meet him off the plane. And honestly, that plane door opened and Oz came to Kansas. Everyone was like, what is this superstar? And I find that intriguing, not so much because of that. I wanted to go back 4 or 5 steps and find out, how the hell did this happen? How did this guy become the most powerful man in the world? From where did he come? And you go straight back to Wexford, to New Ross, and the boats leaving in 1848, the first Kennedy leaving to cross the ocean to work as a cooper in Boston, and working their way up to that high office, and ultimately to that point where it was a homecoming. It wasn't his first time in Ireland, but it was certainly his first visit as president, and it was extraordinary.
I'm glad to be here. It took 115 years to make this trip. And 6,000 miles. And 3 generations. But I'm proud to be here, and I appreciate the warm welcome you've given to all of us. When my great-grandfather left here to become a cooper in East Boston, he carried nothing with him except 2 things: a strong religious faith and a strong desire for liberty. And I'm glad to say, that all of his great-grandchildren have valued that inheritance. Yeah, yeah. If he hadn't left, I'd be working over at the Albatross Company. Or perhaps for John D. Kelly. In any case, we're happy to be back here.
And we do, I suppose, have to reflect the fact that when JFK came here, he did have a really visceral impact, to the extent that every second home in this country had a picture of the Pope, the Sacred Heart, and JFK.
Yeah, that's right. But what I think was really nice about Akira was that he loved it. I think he came over going, this should be a bit of fun, almost like having the crack, and then realized that it was much warmer than that. It was much kinder than that. It was much, as you said, visceral than that. And when he was going around, he went to Limerick, he went to Galway, he went to Cork, he went to Dublin, obviously. And Wexford was the big one, the big homecoming in the Kennedy homestead. And if you listen back to those speeches, he's chuckling along. He's making beautiful references to poetry and history. And I think he really got a sense of the place. And most people, certainly, I think in Ireland, fell in love with them. And a lot of people listening to your show today will have, if not relatives, they themselves will remember it well and will say, oh, yeah, we went out and flew a flag and we saw him and the car passed by and so on. And it's really quite lovely. And they say that when he returned home after this trip, that he used to persecute his family by telling them, please play the footage again of the trip to Ireland, the old reels, so that they could play them in the White House.
And I suppose too, Ryan, there would have been a real contrast when you think about it between John F. Kennedy, his look, his style, and Eamon de Valera, who would have been president at the time in Ireland. You know, it's almost theatrical, their two approaches to the public, to politics.
That's right. And I think that's what really dazzled us and bedazzled us, because we were sort of moving a little bit at that point into Lamass territory, who'd been Taoiseach. And actually, Kennedy connected quite nicely with Lamass. And subsequent to that trip, Lamass went on a visit to Washington and got the full bells and whistles approach. But as a progressive, outward-looking European internationalist, if you want to call him that. But Dev was a very different type of character, as you can appreciate. And I think when people saw that contrast, I think you're alluding to, of this young 40-something with the beautifully cut suit and the glamorous appearance. And he had his, you know, some sisters with him and a sister-in-law with him. And indeed, a cousin of mine by the name of Dorothy Tuberty, who happened to be a bit of a friend of the family's, was there as part of the entourage. And off they went. And yeah, it was a tale of two leaders, wasn't it? And it was kind of grey versus colour.
So what was the family's first foray then into politics? Because it wasn't, as you say, it wasn't John F. Kennedy. He wasn't the first.
No, he wasn't. But there was a Honey Fitzgerald that was on the other side of the family. And he, the Kennedys, they started as coopers, then they work in bars. And anyone who's ever worked in a pub will know that you're really a kind of politician with pint glasses. You know, you fix things, you make things happen. And that's how the family worked their way up. The truth of the matter was that the Kennedy's brother, Joe Kennedy Jr., was meant to be the president, meant to be the senator. But he was killed in action in the skies in World War II. And suddenly the finger was kind of pointed at this gawky, bookish, kind of like disinterested young man in the corner, John F. Kennedy, who said, he was kind of told, "You're up now, Joe's gone, so you have to go." So he wasn't meant to be president necessarily, but he ran for Congress, he got elected, he ran for Senator, he got elected, he ran for President, he got elected. And honestly, you could have a split screen with me and somebody else on this who hates the Kennedys and will say that the dad, you know, was a bootlegger, that he bought the election against Kennedy, that Kennedy was a, you know, a philandering, etc. So there's two different things, and I'm reluctant to be sort of that, to raise them onto a pedestal. I'm just intrigued by who they were, where they got to, rather than lionizing them necessarily. I think the Irish aspect also intrigues me greatly because of what they achieved.
Let's talk about Camelot, this idea of a beautiful, almost mythical place where the Kennedys floated above the ordinary life the rest of us were living. Was that all just an image, do you think, Ryan? And if we think of it just that way, does it obscure the reality?
Yeah, it does. Of course it does. Anything with any sort of elevation of a person or thing. Look at the royal family last week and their ongoing travails. I mean, the further up the mountain you go looking down, the greater the gap with reality becomes. And I think that what happened was, it was also, there was, if you like, would JFK, I often think about this in the modern age, in the internet age, would JFK have survived 10 minutes in the internet age, and his family, broadly speaking? Because there was a sort of strange acceptance at the time. We don't ask those questions, and we don't go there when it comes to peccadillos or anything untoward. So I'm not sure how they would have survived. Fast forward 20, 30 years, and Gary Hart, who you remember was running for president at one stage for the nomination, and you know, he was caught on a boat, weirdly called Monkey Business, with his girlfriend, and that was the end of that. And then fast forward another 20 years plus, and you look at the current incumbent of the White House, and you think what he's getting away with, and you know, it's all very cyclical. So I'm not sure what sociologists will have to say about this in another 20 years.
Well, they might come back to us, Ryan Tuberty. Hopefully we'll still be around. But that's a whole other conversation for a whole other day. I mean, you talk obviously, and we always talk about John F. Kennedy for very obvious reasons here. But yep, there was Robert F. Kennedy. There was, yep, Ted Kennedy. Carolyn Kennedy herself served as a US ambassador. Joe Kennedy III, he'd been involved in diplomacy and politics as well. So we know about their political influence and we know about some of their activism and public service. But we also know about tragedy, and tragedy seems to be completely inseparable from, yeah, the Kennedy name. How central is grief, do you think, to the fascination?
It's such an interesting point, because I think about it every time I hear of another horrible, horrible story. And, you know, I think of Courtney Kennedy, who was married to Paul Hill, who listeners will recall. And their poor daughter died not too long ago, and Courtney had been a guest of mine on the radio show at one point, and we became quite friendly. And she was so happy that her daughter had been to Ireland and loved Ireland, and then she died. And you just say, "Not how? This is a young 21, 2-year-old child in my eyes. How do they keep going?" And then, this is, I mean, we could do a catalogue of what happened to them. There's also the numbers thing. I know it sounds a bit cold, but there's so many of them. They were very, you know, there was a lot of Kennedys and cousins and so forth. So the odds were stacked against them in that sense. But there was also a lot of risk taking, like I mentioned at the beginning of our chat, Kira, the flying the planes, the driving with drinks, skiing into trees and stuff like that. That were just reckless. And I think that was always going to be an issue. I will say, though, just going aside from the tragedy for a moment, you listed some of the other Kennedys. Ted Kennedy was a friend of Ireland's. There's no doubt about it. But also Bill Clinton appointed Jean Kennedy Smith as ambassador to Ireland at a very critical time in the peace process. And both Bill Clinton and Jean Kennedy Smith, I think, will be treated quite kindly by Irish historians, if no one else, for their approach to the peace process. Quite important. And to think that we go from the Irish ship from New Ross going over in 1848 at the height of the famine, and then Jean Kennedy Smith then in the 1990s, helping to secure a visa for Gerry Adams, who then went over to convince the Irish Americans, who then gave him the okay, which then brought back to the Good Friday Agreement. I mean, remarkable. And then go back another generation again. Young Joe, Congressman Joe Kennedy, the younger one, who's currently still in politics. He was an envoy as well. He was an economic envoy, if I'm not mistaken, for Northern Ireland. So the story continues and the fight goes on, to paraphrase Ted Kennedy. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think they were interested in public service. They saw politics as a noble calling. And I know that people will roar laughing at that because we've become so cynical about politics generally, but I still believe that there is a good strain in politics in Ireland and around the world of people who actually want to do things and make the world slightly better. It may be old-fashioned and it may be quixotic, but I have to believe in something.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us here on News Talk Daily.
Thank you so much.
Love Story is streaming now on Disney Plus. There's something I think almost paradoxical about the Kennedys. They are this democratic dynasty in a republic that rejects royalty, yet their lives are constantly dramatized as though they belong to a crown. And each tragedy and each scandal and each streaming series adds, I think, another layer to a story that began long before 1963. And we didn't even get to RFK, who's in office at the moment. So I think it's fair to say that this story shows no sign of ending in 2026. Perhaps what endures isn't just glamour or grief. It may also tell us something about the power of a name. Well, that's it for today's News Talk Daily and indeed for the week. You can catch up on any editions you missed on the Go Loud player. I'm Ciara Doherty, and you can always follow me on Instagram at Official Ciara D.